Good afternoon. My name is Andrea, and I'll be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the Built Environment conference call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you. Ms. Bishop, you may now begin your conference.
Great. I wanted to welcome everyone again to the Built Environment Instruments Addressing Health Promoting Behaviors. You can see on your screen the agenda for today's webinar. We'll have a presentation by Jennifer Gray Stanley, Jennifer Zimmerman, and Jim Rimmer from the University of Illinois at Chicago with the Department of Disability and Human Development and the Center for Health Promotion. They will be presenting on the examination of instruments used to measure the built environment and physical activity. This initiative was funded through AUCD's cooperative agreement with the National Center on Birth Defects and Developmental Disabilities at CDC. We are thrilled to have them present today on their initiative. And through AUCD's cooperative agreement, I just wanted to give you a little background on what we do here at AUCD through that cooperative agreement. One, we really look at strengthening the nation's capacity to carry out public health and disability activities, really looking at fostering collaborations among AUCD, our network, and other CDC and NCBDD. Also, we provide technical assistance to the state disability and health grantees, and really looking at enhancing the capacity of states and really creating collaborative systems change in the early identification, assessment, and service coordination for children with autism spectrum disorder, and that's through our ACT Early Regional Summit initiative. Really also looking at strengthening expertise in the fields of birth defects and developmental disabilities through fellowships and training fellowship opportunities, and then also looking at, again, facilitating a wide range of research, education, and dissemination activities. Today, the call is, we do have a conference coordinator, and she will put all of us on mute during the presentation, and then she will facilitate a question and answer session at the end of the session. You can also submit any questions in the online webinar presentation through, it's the go-to webinar text box at any time. We'll go ahead and I'll turn it over to Jennifer, both Jennifer's and Jim, for their presentation.
Well, thank you very much, Ilya. We're delighted to be here this morning to kind of give you a very brief overview of this presentation today. This is a CDC supplement that we received a year ago to begin to examine the vast number of built environment instruments that are available in the literature. And so today's presentation will be framed as follows. I'll just do a very brief introduction of the project, and then I'll turn it over to my colleague, Dr. Jennifer Gray Stanley, to describe some of the instruments that we've identified, and hopefully at the end of the session provide you with the resources and website to be able to gather information and to be able to build either your own instrument or identify what instruments may be available for use in the future. So with that, I'll go ahead and begin with the next slide. Again, I'd like to thank CDC, if they are on the call, for providing us with this supplement to begin to examine the literature and identify the built environment instruments that are available in the literature. So today's presentation will be myself, Jennifer Gray Stanley, who will do the bulk of the presentation, and we also have on the call Jennifer Zimmerman, who's a PhD candidate from DePaul University, and she has assisted us in a really good way in terms of finding the instruments and posting them to the website, which you'll learn about later. So if we look at, what is the importance of or significance of this particular study, I think what most people are starting to realize now is that we've had a lot of behavioral studies over the last several years, and there are limitations in what we've learned in terms of increase in physical activity and reducing physical inactivity in this nation. So that has led to the examination of this area called the built environment, which I know many of you on the call are aware of. And what we mean by the built environment is really looking at the presence of accessible walking and bicycling paths, and for our population, we like to refer to that as rolling or strolling. Also, community recreation is a critical part of life in general, and many of you know that we've been doing a lot of work in the area of looking at accessible health and fitness facilities, so that's part of this as well. Transportation systems, and for this presentation, we focused mainly on urban design characteristics, but we know that a couple of you, several of you, I should say, are from rural areas or work in rural settings, so we understand that, and we'll try to make reference to that on a couple of different occasions during the presentation. In terms of healthy communities, I know many of you have the CDC module on livable communities, so you're very aware of what this whole area of healthy communities means. But essentially what we're looking at today in this presentation is addressing the areas of sidewalks and parks. We also are hoping that we'll be able to share with you either today or through the website whether or not an environment is aesthetically pleasing, because we know that the more aesthetics an environment has, and the more likely someone will participate in some type of physical activity. Adequate street lighting and also seating is very important for many individuals who use assistive aids. They may need seating within a close proximity to where they park and actually go for their walk or stroll. And then also safety is critical, especially in urban environments such as the one that we're from at the University of Illinois at Chicago, where the crime rate could prevent many people from participating in outdoor activity. And also the other part of safety is, many of you who are cyclists know, that the interaction of a bicycle with an automobile or a truck can be very dangerous at times. And that's a concern that we have, and I know that in general that's a concern for communities who are now starting to restructure and rebuild their built environment. So the goal for all of us really is to look at can we actually use the principles of universal design to make environments more friendly for everyone, including people with disabilities. And so on this next slide, the last slide that I'll be presenting, we really are looking today at discussing in kind of a more macro format the dozens of instruments that have been developed or are currently under development but lack the integration and cohesion in terms of how they relate to people with disabilities. There's a growing need for a synthesized and integrated assessment tool that measures the accessibility of the built environment, which is inclusive of people with disabilities. And that's something that really amazed us as we went through this project. We ended up with close to 100, was that mm-hmm. instruments mm-hmm. That have been developed to assess some aspect of the physical or built environment. And, that's just unfortunate because many of these instruments do have overlapping domains and items. And we think that at some point down the road, we could customize an instrument that may be relevant to everyone. So that's sort of our ending statement, which we'll get back to at the end of the presentation. And then, of course, this third bullet really kind of hits the mark for many of you who are part of the CDC Disability and Health Program, that you need more detail on the specific instruments that are being used by your colleagues in public health or in the community to redesign or to design new communities. So as a new instrument comes up in a certain part of your state, I think it's critical for you as a disability health professional to ensure that whatever design is going to occur or redesign or retrofit, that it does meet the needs of your constituency group. And so with that, I'll go ahead and turn it over to Jennifer.
Hi, everybody. I'm going to give you a little bit more detail on the project and what information is available on our website. Again, like Jim was saying, we were looking at livable communities, opportunities of people of all abilities to be active and engaged in their communities, whether that involves walking, biking, rolling, having accessible streetscapes, accessible recreational opportunities. our inclusive population focus is not only for people with disabilities, both physical, sensory, visual, auditory impairments, people with cognitive impairments or intellectual and developmental disabilities, but also people pushing delivery carts, cyclists with a baby carrier, wheeled bags. There's many different users that can benefit from these accessible environments. And as Jim was talking about, we have found a significant amount of overlap across the current instruments that are used by communities to assess the built environment and how it affects physical activity or health promotion. And our purpose here is to catalog these, provide information on instruments that are existing, and have that information resource available for a variety of user groups for research as well as for practical community assessment usage. So just to review a little bit about our Universal Design Health Promotion Project, two main goals from this project. One was to look at what degree is there subject domain overlap across reviewed instruments. And then secondly, to provide more specific information on each of these instruments with respect to whether or not they've been validated or not, what are the subdomain areas, how can you get a hold of an instrument if you want to use it. So what I'm going to be reviewing over the next few minutes, we're going to review a lot of the information that's on our website currently, instrument-specific information, review domain overlap across our instruments, instruments that have specific relevance to people with disabilities. Then we'll discuss how we feel what subdomains of these instruments have universal domain potentiality and some recommendations how they could maybe improve on universal domain potentiality. And then just provide our website information as well as contact information if you want to get in touch with any of us here for technical assistance. So just to review briefly a few notes on our project methodology. Our working definition of built environment has been communities urban design. However, we also looked at some instruments that measured rural environments, transportation, recreation options within a geographical space, which can impact individuals' physical activity levels or health promotion behaviors. So this has included, it's a very broad definition, he has included everything ranging from land use, streetscape, other dimensions such as recreational areas, as well as we also included instruments which include questions on policy and planning to policy and planning with respect to the built environment in a community. Our search strategy included literature searches, review articles, professionals' contacts for finding the instruments that we have so far reviewed that are on our website, variety of keywords that we used. We also, any other instruments that were referenced within the instrument development literature, we also check those out. So it's a pretty tedious process. Sometimes the paper trail isn't really clear in terms of the instrument development literature. Our inclusion criteria was instruments for both environmental audits and perceived environmental measures of walkability and bikeability, recreational structures, and general built environmental features that can impact physical activity, such as roads, intersections, crosswalks, etc. GIS, environmental assessments of urban or, didn't put rural, but design qualities. Instruments that are specific to transportation and accessibility for people with disabilities, and then also instruments that have been used frequently in communities. We excluded instruments that focused exclusively on behavioral physiological measurements related to physical activity in a geographical space, although some of the instruments included a section on that, and that was fine. Instruments that had insufficient information in psychometrics, validation information, or instrument development literature, and when they had no track record of use in the communities. In some cases, we did review instruments that have been used frequently, and then within our abstraction form, you'll see that there is, as of our best efforts, we have not been able to find any validation information on that instrument. And also, we excluded the instrument if we could not locate the complete instrument through our search strategy. So I'm going to walk you through some of our information that's provided on the website and how we've organized the information that we've been collecting. Instrument abstractions, this is a screenshot, and I can of the instrument abstractions that are on our website, provides a brief summary of each instrument, the name, authors, affiliated organizations, the purpose of the instrument. We cataloged whether it was considered an audit instrument, if it's a perceived measure of like a perceived survey instrument, such as questions might be asking a community member, do you feel safe walking in your neighborhood at night, or is the information collected through GIS methods? In some cases, it was collected in all three ways, so we listed that as well. We provided information on for what geographic scale was the instrument meant to be used, and that was very instrument specific. We used the terminology that the instrument used. So some instruments might use community, others neighborhood, others maybe school or school environment, for example. If there is information on the instrument development methods, we provide that, validation information, provide information on what are the key subdomain areas that are covered in that instrument, whether or not the instrument considers disability issues. It might be just one question that asks about the impact of the environment on a person with a disability. That was enough to indicate that it does. The number of items, the length of the instrument, the number of instruments. In some cases, there was more than one format for the same instrument, like a pedestrian and a bicyclist version, for example. And then we just had contact information, if there's a URL, person contact, other definitions and notes. And I'll just mention, too, Active Living Research also has done reviews on some of these instruments, and we have other added to what they've done, and that's indicated on these reviews as well. The checklist table provides the summary of all our instruments reviewed to date, provides easy summary, and that's also loaded on our website. Provides a name, author's development year, if that information was available, the instrument, the primary author, what field they come from, what type of instrument it is, if there is validation information available, and whether or not the instrument considers disability issues. And then I'm going to segue into the domain summary tables. This are grids that provide information on what instruments cover what domain and subdomain areas. So this can be potentially very useful for communities that want to pinpoint an instrument or instruments that they want to use, or maybe they already are using in their community. So you want to look at X, Y, and Z subdomain areas, assess that in your community. You can see at just immediately what instruments cover those subdomain areas. Then you have to go into the instrument to, you know, you can look at the instrument abstraction to get more, a little more detail on the instrument and then obtain the instrument yourself. Could also be good for developing new instruments or, like Jim was saying, a next step from this study is to be looking at development of a mega instrument or some hybrid instruments from what's already out there. Domain areas, we we're looking at four main domain areas of these domain overview tables. There's built environment infrastructure, referring to your streetscape, roads, curb cuts, ramps, intersection crosswalks. Think about traffic control, transportation, parking, and then policies and plans related to that. Second larger domain area is walkability, referring to your sidewalk path dimensions, as well as whether or not it exists. There's a presence of a sidewalk path in a certain area. Walking safety with respect to traffic or crime, pedestrian volume and speed, aesthetics in the community, that's very, very important, and amenities in the walking environment, such as benches and water fountains and stuff like Jim had talked about, and again, policies and planning regarding walkability in a community. Bikeability, again, refers, we provided information on, looked at domain overlap across bicycle lane paths, the dimensions of bicycle lane paths, bicycling safety, safety issues, and then policies, planning, education issues. And then finally, recreation sites and structures, the final domain area we looked at, refers to recreation facilities, fitness centers in a community, pools, parks, and other types of recreational facilities, in addition, other types of amenities or resources that are necessary to have a beneficial experience in a recreation environment. So we found, have some charts on the domain overlap in the built environment infrastructure. You find higher overlap, traffic volume density, parking availability, crosswalk signs and signals, go into walkability, domain overlap. We have higher overlap, presence of sidewalk path, condition of the sidewalk, condition and maintenance, crime, walking safety related to crime issues. And you can see kind of, this is referring to what percent of instruments had at least one question or item referring to that subdomain category. Bikeability, the presence of a bicycle lane or path had high overlap, and safety, bicycling safety issues, as well as bicycling resources were a key, had high overlap. And then recreation sites and structures, the availability of recreational areas or fitness centers, parks, and amenities and resources had higher overlap across instruments. So that information, again, is provided. I can show you after maybe finish with my part of the presentation. That's provided in tables that are also on our website for your use to see which instruments cover which domain areas. Then we also looked at, we found that out of the instruments that we've covered so far, that 29 of them have at least one question or item that considers disability-related issues. That could be, is it wheelchair accessible? Is there accessible signage? Is there accessible crosswalk area or other types of pedestrian facilities? What are the attitudes towards people with disabilities in your area? Accessible parking facilities. We have a table that kind of provides a snapshot of the instruments that consider disability issues, what their main subdomain areas are in that instrument, and then some sample items. So particularly if you're already using some of these instruments or you're interested in looking into instruments that have more of a focus for people with disabilities, that's a good place to start, is that table.
Yeah.
And then we also looked at universal design potentiality across subdomain areas. We looked at seven to do that analysis. We looked at 7 universal design principles, just kind of review them briefly, that they're equitable in use, so useful for people of diverse abilities. They're flexible, can accommodate individual preferences and abilities. Simple, easy, intuitive to use. Perceptible information, so it communicates information that's necessary despite somebody's, regardless of their sensory abilities. That there's some type of tolerance for error, minimizes hazards or accidental, unintended actions. The example is like the computer undo function. Provides or can be used with low physical effort, so used efficiently, comfortably, with a minimum of fatigue. And then it's size and space for approaching use, meaning that it's appropriate size and space for the reach, manipulation, use, regardless of somebody's physical abilities. So we went through and looked at, this is a table that provides, we looked at subdomains that we thought, looked at all the subdomains that we had, resulted from an examination of all these instruments, and then considered to what extent is there universal design potentiality, what ways could these subdomain areas be, items be improved for future iterations of instruments to become more accessible for a wide variety of users, like we say, everybody from person with a disability to somebody pushing a cart.
Yeah, maybe just give a couple examples if you go back.
I'm going to give them
okay.
Right here.
All right.
And just like I was saying, the accessibility for, you know, multiple users. So some of our recommendations are based on ADAG and other sources that are found on the table I just showed on the website. Some recommendations might be, and some instruments currently are measuring this, and that's where we have some other tables in development that were indicating that materials that are smooth, stable, even, that the condition, to step back for a minute, ADAG, the American Disability Act accessibility guidelines. So they provide some guidelines to make sure that that the environment is going to be accessible for people with disabilities, and we're recommending that. I mean, that also might be considered for just to bring it to everybody's attention,
right,
to be using that as a guideline for more universal
design
applicability. Make sure that the condition, maintenance of the sidewalks, that there's not some catch hazard for someone with a dragging foot or using a walking aid, that cracks are periodically repaired, that the width is ample for people, maybe 2 individuals or 2 people in wheelchairs or 2 bicyclists, a slope that's flat and gentle, and the ADAG gives recommendations on grade. Curb cut, ramp dimensions, again, considering having a grade and cross slope that is not too onerous for wheelchair users, for example, or somebody using a walking aid. Crosswalk signage and signals, making sure there's visual, tactile, audible cues. There's pictures and universal symbols and colors for people maybe with a cognitive impairment, intellectual developmental disability, or even it could be useful for someone momentarily crossing the street who's looking at a map or momentarily distracted. So in many ways can be these universal design applications can be useful for many user groups. Crosswalk features, raised crosswalks that are detectable. There's a detectable difference between the sidewalk and street, so someone with a visual impairment, for example, can detect that difference. There might be luminescence contrast as well for someone with visual impairments. A crossing refuge island, making sure that that's big enough for 2 wheelchair users to use that space, or somebody with a baby stroller or bike using a bike or whatever, that it's a big enough space so there's not going to be safety problems with respect to traffic. Crossing timing is a big issue. Often wheelchair users can, and scooter users can make the 4 feet per second crossing time, but it is often people using walking aids or have other types of mobility impairments, people with visual impairments or even maybe small children might not be able to make that crossing speed. So recommendations on pedestrian controls to increase the crossing timing when needed, and maybe providing more divided crossing distances, like with a refuge island that provides big enough space for somebody to wait there. And then a few other notes, transportation, making sure that public transit vehicle stations have wheelchair lifts, elevators, paratransit availability is available as needed, that on-street parking is going to have an access aisle accommodate for van accessible spots and for allow for sidewalk access as well through like a ramp or for getting from parking into a building so that it's large enough so someone using assisted device or walking aid or wheelchair can use that as well. And then recreation facilities and structures, making sure that all entrances and exits, piers, fitness centers, et cetera, that the space aisles are wide enough for people, all user groups to use. Amenities, like we had mentioned before, making sure the benches have the right height and width. They have arms and back so they can support people with different disabilities. Telephones maybe have, that some of them at least have TTY access. And I'm just going to show you where this information is on our website. Try to click over here. So here's our website. Here we have information. These are just our domain overlap charts. Here's our summary tables that I went through. Disability specific instruments, for example. Open that up. Domain overlap tables are right below that, and again, this is provides a grid. Let's see, grid of instruments. See, the instruments are on your on the side going down, and across the x-axis on the top. You have the different subdomain areas, and then through this grid process, you can see what instruments cover what subdomain areas. And then here are all the abstractions. They're listed, by the name alphabetically, and you can, whatever you're, go ahead and click on that. If you have some other questions, too, you can call us, and we'll provide our contact information at the end of the, here's a, for example, instrument abstraction. We'll provide this contact information and website, but just to give you an overview of that. I'm gonna hand things over to Jim right now, and then talk to you as we're wrapping up the call.
Great. Okay. Well, thank you very much, Jennifer. And I know that this is a lot to absorb and synthesize in a very short period of time, and we realize that. And I know many of you have also done webinars, so it's not obviously the most convenient way or the most ideal way to kind of convey what is a very technical project that involves hundreds, perhaps thousands of items that have been collected over the last year and a half and then assembled into these very, what we think are very convenient, portable, easy-to-use tables so that you can start to use this as a reference point for identifying areas of interest that you may have in assessing some component of your environment. But just to also mention, one of the big features of this project is to share with you what your associates may be using, or colleagues, or people who reside in your state are using in terms of auditing the environment to determine what needs to be done. So Jennifer had mentioned the ADAG guidelines, and I know most of you are aware of that. It stands for the Americans with Disabilities Act Accessibility Guidelines. And, you know, we know that some of these items that you're going to be seeing on the website are required by law. So, you know, the slope, curb cuts, you know, certain types of entranceways when there are federal resources available and being used, and sizes of the facility, many of these are required by law. And sometimes that's all you can get out of architects and city planners is some level of agreement that they're willing to, you know, to make these alterations or to include in the design features what is required of them. But the other component that we're hoping to see sometime in the future is that there's a higher level. There's minimal accessibility, and then there's a level of accessibility that's more accommodated, and it's not necessarily required by law. So you'll be able to decipher from the instruments and the tools that are available on the website, you know, what are part of the ADAG guidelines. And, you know, if you need assistance with that, you know, we can certainly help you do that. But I know that as you begin to grow in your communities and start to reach out to the key constituency groups that are redesigning or designing new areas, new environments, including, you know, many new home sites or buildings or recreation areas, we just want you to know before the webinar ends today that, you know, we now have a very good composite of instruments. We think most of them, in fact, that do that are being used today throughout the country and the world in some cases to look at features of the built environment. So our goal today is to work with you in helping to ensure that as you begin to look at your livable communities in your respective states, that you're aware of how we could make these instruments more universally designed and what may need to be discussed in, you know, with the planner in terms of making the environment more accessible to people with disabilities. So I very briefly wanted to just end with just a couple of future direction slides and some of the ongoing work that we're doing with a 5-year study that we are currently engaged in. We have created an instrument that we're hopefully going to be submitting a manuscript on it in very near future called the HESEAT, and it stands for the Health Empowerment Zone Environmental Accessibility Tool. We also have the AIM-FREE. Many of you know the AIM-FREE. It stands for Accessibility Instruments Measuring Fitness and Recreation Environments. This is a tool that will assist you in measuring access to the indoor environment, such as a fitness center or a recreation facility or an indoor or outdoor swimming pool. And then the third bullet is, you know, our goal, and this is where we originally got into a discussion with CDC, was to kind of look at the possibility someday of developing what we call a CAT-based instrument, which CAT stands for Computerized Adaptive Testing Tools. So these CAT-based instruments are now becoming more and more popular, but there aren't any at this point that we're aware of for the environment. Most of these CAT-based instruments involve obtaining data, personal data from an individual, and most of the research has come out of the National Cancer Institute, where, you know, they were finding there was a great deal of problems with collecting lots of information on people. So the idea of the CAT-based instrument is that you can ask a very small number of items and still maintain a good level of validity and reliability for a certain domain that you're measuring. So, for example, if you wanted to look at an area of your environment, such as, you know, the accessibility of a neighborhood in terms of the number of curb cuts or streets, instead of asking, you know, 25 items, if it was a computer adaptive test, you might be able to get away with that using 3 or 4 of the items in order to assess that environment and still come out with a valid level of information related to the accessibility of that setting. So the title of our study is Building Health Empowerment Zones for People with Disabilities. It's an NIH R01 grant that was started in 2005 and will go till likely July 2011. We're looking at a 1-year no-cost extension. And in phase one, we created this tool that I just described, which involved what we call the Delphi process, where we actually went out and sought the expertise of 8 experts in this area of environmental assessment, and had a series of iterations where they looked at the tool, made recommendations, and then they would rate a particular item as high or low. And we would obtain what we call content validity ratios. And from there, we were able to pare down the instrument into a reasonable number of items. And we also, let me just back up a minute, we also obtained many of the items that we began with through 5 instruments. The Spaces, which is an instrument to measure pedestrian and walking, created in Australia. The Check, which many of you know was created by our good colleague David Gray at Washington University. The Chief was created by Gail Whiteneck at Craig Hospital in Denver. And then we use the ADAG guidelines, and also the Federal Transportation has a list of guidelines in terms of accessible transportation. So that's where this instrument came from. We ended up with 9 expert raters in disability and environmental fields. And so items on this HESEAT, we have the slope of the sidewalk, we have presence of curb cuts, level changes, whether or not a sidewalk is broken or in need of repair, measure of the sidewalk in terms of its width, because we know, again, as Jennifer mentioned, if you have 2 wheelchair users side by side, sometimes the sidewalk is much too narrow for them to navigate, or in many cases, even 1 wheelchair user and 1 person walking could be very difficult with many of these very narrow sidewalks. Obstacles, you know, as you can see from this slide here, this is a picture of an obstacle in Chicago. But, you know, obviously if someone has a visual impairment and is using a white cane, this could be a very dangerous situation if they don't recognize that there's an obstacle right in the middle of the walking path. And also the timing to cross street. These are the major domains that came out of the expert panel. So timing to cross street, we've heard on a number of occasions from people with disabilities and people who use various types of mobility devices, that it's a real concern to them, that they're not going to get across the street in time. And again, being in an urban environment like Chicago, that could be a real problem, where it could limit someone's interest or ability to actually get out and do grocery shopping or go places if they have to cross very busy streets and are unable to do so without feeling that they're at risk. So here's just an example of, this is a curb cut in Chicago, very close up, and you can see that the actual slope of the curb cut is causing an encumbrance to this wheelchair user, and makes it very difficult for not only manual wheelchair users, but also people who use power mobility devices very often have a difficult time getting up, a slope this high. So that's one example. This particular photo shows you how we measure the slope of the curb cuts and the sidewalks. This is a smart tool that was created by a colleague of ours, Peter Axelson, who now resides in Denver. And it gives you slope, and it also
slope and cross slope.
Yeah. So just the slope, you know, and also it does cross slope as well. Yeah. But it's nice. It's like a level. Many of you have seen a level, and it's the same concept, except that this automatically does it. So you just press a button, and it computes the slope and then gives you a digital readout, so you don't have to, you know, measure it manually. And then, of course, fitness centers, that's been a very big area of ours. These are 2 fitness facilities in our health empowerment zone that are very accessible. And so, you know, obviously we're assessing not only the outdoor environment, but in this study we're also looking at the indoor setting and the accessibility of fitness centers. And then just here's a couple of examples of some of the outdoor environments that many of our participants have to experience on a daily basis. Most of our participants are African American and come from very deep pockets of poverty in the Chicago area. And that's one of the concerns, is that when we look at the built environment and the physical features of the built environment, the inner city, lower income neighborhoods are a lot worse than in the upper income areas of Chicago. So that obviously, is something that we are continually trying to work with our mayor's office on people with disabilities. But again, you can see just a few examples here of the difficult terrain on a sidewalk, no less, that someone has to navigate. And then, of course, transportation, as you know, many of you from rural areas, is also an enormous issue for people with disabilities. And these are just a couple of examples of the transportation system in Chicago. You know, many people do use public transportation, and more often than not, the lifts do work, but on occasion they don't. And then someone might have to wait a longer period of time at the bus stop for a bus to come by with a lift that is functioning. Most of them should work, but what we're finding is it's not necessarily the permanency of the built environment that are creating barriers for people with disabilities, but rather these temporary obstacles that all of a sudden occur. You know, a piece of a sidewalk is broken, or they're doing major construction and they block off the sidewalk, or a lift is not working. Or in many cases, when we look at transportation in Chicago, you know, the paratransit system is enormously complex and restricts a lot of people from using it because you have to call, I believe, 1 week in advance and set an appointment. And, you know, how many people are going to be able to say, okay, I'm going to go to the fitness center 3-4 days a week and, you know, I need to be picked up at 9 o'clock, you know? Doesn't necessarily work that way, especially if they're not feeling well. They might want to go at 10 o'clock, so then they cancel, and then it becomes a problem when they do cancel, especially if they don't cancel, you know, within a reasonable period of time. And there are certain areas that they're not allowed to go to on the paratransit, and you know, recreation and fitness is not necessarily a high priority. So there's limited opportunities for people with disabilities to use it to go shopping or to go to recreation centers because there's such a demand in Chicago in particular for use of this transportation system. So one of our goals in perhaps a forthcoming project is we're hoping that we can get the city to sort of provide an incentive for people with disabilities to begin using public transportation and to not depend on this paratransit system. And for that to occur, you know, they're going to have to be some significant changes made to public transportation so that people with disabilities, particularly those who use mobility aids, feel more comfortable using public transportation. But you can see here in the slide on the left, you know, a good accessible lift that works and doesn't make a lot of noise and doesn't create, you know, a huge scene, you know, is a fairly good and effective way for people with disabilities to get around the environment. And, of course, one of the other areas that we're looking at are grocery stores. And for the most part, the larger grocery stores are fairly accessible. We did publish a paper in Archives of Physical Medicine and Rehabilitation, I think it was last year, 2008, by one of the lead authors whose focus is on the nutrition side of this NIH study. And she found that the larger stores obviously were a bit more accessible. There were issues related to reaching certain types of items and inavailability of certain foods. And many of you might know this, that they generally put the she's a wheelchair user, and so she noticed that a lot of the cereals, for example, the sugared cereals or the cereals that are not as healthy are at the lower levels, about the height of the wheelchair users, so that the you know, mainly for young children grabbing them off the shelf as they're in the store with their mothers, and the healthier cereals she found to be at the top and not in reach for her. So just little things like that could create much more friendly environments in not only fitness centers but also in these grocery stores. The smaller grocery stores, we measured a number of them. Many of them are very, very inaccessible. But these, again, are stores that don't necessarily have to comply with ADA guidelines because they're very small, kind of your convenience-type stores that, when I say convenience, again, they're not big chains. These are individual owners who live in these small communities, predominantly Hispanic or African-American, where the stores are very, very narrow. There's lots of clutter, very difficult for people to navigate the aisles, very narrow aisles. Many of them have a step going into the store so that, you know, that there's, you know, they can't get, a wheelchair can't get in, or if somebody has difficulty getting up onto a step, they're completely inaccessible. So we're trying to work with these store owners to let them know that that even if they are inaccessible, there is something required in terms of, you know, curbside shopping where they're supposed to be able to come to the curb outside the store and deliver the groceries to the individual. So this is, you know, getting a work in progress. And so with that, you know, I think we're at the end of the webinar. I'll go ahead and turn it back over to Jennifer. She wants to talk to you a little bit about just a couple of minutes on this whole area of technical assistance, which I think will be the key piece for those of you on the call.
Yeah, hi everybody.
So I showed, here's our website address. Any questions you have, you can call us or email me. It also is a dynamic website, so if you do know of other instruments that you want to be included, please let us know as well. And with that, you know, we can definitely answer questions, or if we don't know the answer, provide you with information. So, we'll go ahead and open it up to questions now.
Andrea, this is Ilya, and we'd like it to open up for question and answer.
Yes, ma'am. As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, you may do so by pressing star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. Again, if you would like to ask a question, you may do so by pressing star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. And there are no questions at this time.
Okay, great.
Okay.
Jim, Jennifer, thank you very much. Wonderful presentation. Really appreciate you taking the time to present your initiative and your work. And again, their information is available on the screen right now, and AUCD will be posting the slides on our website as well following the call, so you will have access to those as well. At this point, I'd like to...
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Thank everybody for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. Have a good day.
You too.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect.